Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Get us better away? Now, Charlie.
Welcome to Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo Guerrero Jr. I'm your host, Chavo Guerrero Jr.
Hey guys, thanks for joining me on the Suplexes and Cervezas podcast this week. Hopefully you're having a beautiful cerveza somewhere, sitting underneath the sun, maybe by a nice pool or beach, and not getting suplexed, because that is what I'm doing, and it feels damn good. This week, I get to talk to two of my favorite people, wrestling diva Gail Kim, who's one of the best wrestlers in the world, and not just female wrestlers, but just wrestlers. She's put on some great matches in WWE and TNA and all over the place, and this girl can really bring it. Pretty good sense of humor also. I love her. And her celebrity chef husband, Robert Irvine. Really, really cool guy. When I first met him, I hit it off with him right off the bat. Good dude, man's man, but real giving guy. He's, you know, been all over the world doing stuff for the troops. And he's coming out of the Royal Navy and cooking over there. And you'll hear us talk about that. And just talk about stuff that he's done with the Trump organization, how he got started with that, and the goods and the bads. Also, a good story is that we were at Gail and Robert's wedding. And this is the best wedding you've ever seen. I mean, there were celebrity chefs all over the place cooking and the best food, the best drinks. And it was at a beautiful winery up in Napa Valley and pretty amazing venue and amazing wedding. They say there in wrestling, it's never a party unless Chavo takes his shirt off. And that's kind of goes around in the wrestling world a little bit. So at that wedding, of course, I took my shirt off. And who was right there right with me at his own wedding was Robert. Robert took his shirt off, and we had a little bit of a pose down. And, you know, Robert's in great shape. He's always working out. He's always looking good. So he gave me a run for my money for sure. But, you know, usually any wedding I go to, it's me getting the party started with the shirt coming off. And, you know, it was Robert. It was right there, man. So I was like, all right, I like this guy. It was a good time. Check out the listen. I know you're going to like it a lot. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button and get notified every time a new podcast comes out. Again, appreciate it, guys. And next is Gail Kim and Robert Irvine.
Hey, guys, what's going on? Thank you for taking time out of your day and joining little old Chavo on his podcast. I really, really appreciate it.
It's so funny.
You're not so little anymore.
Well, no, yeah, you're built right now. It's so funny because people I've done podcasts with, they'll always follow up with, hey, do you think Robert will do the podcast, my podcast? And I'm like, I can ask. And it's just, it goes through a process for him.
Totally.
And he says no all the time, except when she said to you, I said, oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was like, and I did tell Chavo, you were very smart about that, asking us to come on together.
Well, that wasn't my idea.
Like we don't know you.
Yeah, it was, we're friends.
Yeah,
and you're at my wedding, our wedding, my wedding.
Exactly. Her wedding.
It was her wedding.
His wedding.
I always say that, my wedding.
You do.
Because I produced it. till 9 o'clock. Then hold on.
What a wedding. Oh my God. Like, there's never anybody listening. This, you've never seen a wedding like this ever. It was amazing at a winery with the best foods and chefs cooking. And it was amazing. It was amazing.
You know what's good? Chavo has his shirt off at the end of the night.
I wasn't the only one with my shirt off.
But Chavo always starts it, and then he gets the party started.
That's true.
Well, Sherry, your wife, actually started unbuttoning your shirt. That's the story I heard of how it started.
It wasn't Sherry. It was... it wasn't Sherry, it was Lisa. It was Lisa. You know, Lisa, that's her, like, her thing. And what was cool is that, and I had never met Robert before, but Robert followed suit right there. He was like, oh, really? He takes his tuxedo off and we have our shirts on.
That was the first time you guys met?
Yeah.
That was the first time. Oh my God. I don't think I ever met him.
I took my tuxedo off and shirt off, and then Justin followed, then everybody followed.
Then we shut cameras
off.
But that's basically how it goes. I mean, what do they say in wrestling? It's not a party till Chavo takes his shirt off.
Exactly.
And I heard that before.
That's what they say. You know, I kind of retired that guy a little bit. I don't know. Maybe I'll bring him out every once in a while. Maybe it's a pandemic that's retired him.
Well, our 10-year anniversary is going to come up not too long from now. So get ready.
Yeah. My 50th birthday was amazing. And then we're going to do another one for our 10-year, right?
I feel like we throw a good party.
Yeah. Pays for it.
Someone else pays for it.
Right. But you know what? We like to party. We like to have fun. You know, we're good people. We have good friends. When you get good friends together, what do? Good people, good friends, they party and have a good time. So just, you know, I could be like in a morgue with a bunch of alcohol and we'd still have an awesome time, you know.
I'm going to be around people. I like to do that.
Yeah.
You know.
So. We always have a good time.
I'm the same way though. I'm the same way as Robert. Like I'm reserved until I get around my friends. Like I feel comfortable and then I let it loose. But I don't do that very often because it's hard.
People have a public perception of you, right? And me and Gail. So we always say, even when we go to the restaurant in Vegas or we're somewhere, there's a kind of somebody stopping you. And then when you get behind closed doors and there's a group of people that you trust with no phones, then you can let your hair down. You can have fun. And, you know, the reason I got in the restaurant business is because you can drink and eat for free.
That's also a very hard business to be in, as, you know, his show.
Well, I used to work in the restaurant business. I mean, I started as a busboy at 18 or 17. And then I worked all my way up and worked until I was 25. As you know, I was a busboy, and then I was a waiter, and then I was the delivery guy, and then I was a bar back, and I was a bartender for 6 years, training for wrestling, doing wrestling.
I got everything else, but the bartending piece I wasn't interested in.
That's where you make the most money.
That was the best part. The best part was because bartending, you're around your little area, and it was just like me hanging out, serving drinks. I mean, until I got really busy, but it was just talking to people and just hanging out and getting them drunk. I do now.
They said when I was cocktailing, I always liked bartending better because it's first off that barrier between you and the other person. And also they come to you as opposed to you going to them, you know, as a waitress, you go to them and then you're like, you know,
And then I was young. I was, you know, 21 to 24. So I was single. It was awesome because
ready to mingle.
Oh, for sure. Totally. And then we were trying to figure it out one time. And so I'm being on the customer part of the bar, the guest part of the bar. You know, women, you know, you're a threat. You're a threat to them because you're there. Hey, what's up? Can I buy you a drink? Stuff. Well, when I was a bartender, I wasn't a foot. I was just working. Yeah. So there were times when I'd be like sitting there and just working my butt off and whatever. And then I'd have at the end of the night, a girl go, "Hey, my girlfriend really likes you. And she really wants to go out with you." And I'm like, "Who? I haven't seen her all night." I look at her, I go, "All right, I'm off about 15 minutes. It was so easy.
This is true. I always, when I was a bartender, I always said, I would never date, I'm not going to date any customers and anybody I meet at the bar. But I mean, that was pretty much my social life. So
that's how I met Sherry.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Right?
I met Sherry. Her best friend worked with me and she came in and I was like, "Whoa, all right. Who the heck is that?" "Oh yes. Her best friend." I was like, "She's Danielle or Danny. She's Danny's friend. I'm in.
How long have you guys been married now? I was trying to.
22 years.
Goals. Yeah.
22. She's kicked me out so many times.
It's okay.
Well, we're just talking about.
But you're still
about,
back there, right? So like, at the end of the day, yeah. I figured this out.
Yes.
Women go in cycles, right? Mm-hmm. You can do everything right. And then a cycle hits and everything's wrong.
Are you talking about then, our womanly then, cycles?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. The right and wrong cycle, I call it.
Okay.
You do everything wrong. You do everything right. You do everything. And it's only a matter, you can almost say in weeks, oh, in 6 weeks from today, it's going to be a bad time. Because that's the way the female mind works. And guys are so dumb. We are.
Simple.
We never. Yes. No, dumb. I use the word dumb because we never pick up on those things. And if we spent 5 minutes thinking about it, you're like, "Oh yeah, okay, got it."
Yeah, we're not that smart. That I've noticed that we're not calculating. We're not. We just kind of just do.
I'm so glad you guys both agree on this, and I have this as proof.
You know what? Women are, they're so much more complicated than us, and nothing just more complicated. We're just a different being. Guys were so easy. It's like, and I always say, you feed us and fuck us, and we're happy. That's it. That's it. I mean, there's not much more.
Overanalyze things, I find.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's some more than others. Some girls more than others, for sure. But, you know, like, look at our TV shows. You know, women like, you know, Vanderpump Rules and Orange County Housewives and all this drama stuff.
Yeah.
When men like, I like cooking shows and I like building shows and there might be some drama in there, like, you know, like West Coast Choppers, you know, the dad and the son going off, you know, screw you, but they're building stuff. So I'm looking like, "Oh, how do I do this?" And your shows are about making a business and building something and the drama that goes around that. Of course, I mean, it's about drama, but
really because that drama happens on its own. You know, most of these shows that you just mentioned that females watch, the drama is created.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And that's absolutely.
That's one thing I've said in our shows, the shows that I do. I never want drama. And if we've got to fake something, we're not doing it. I won't do it.
Right.
That's my cutoff. I'm like, no. Or if they bring in somebody on Iron Chef or a competition show that's an actor and they tell me, "Oh, I think it needs more salt," or "I think it needs this," I'm like, "Do I tell you how to act?" No. So exactly. Don't tell me. No. So I don't do those shows because of that. And that's the truth. I mean, I won't do them because they're like, "Oh, who's going to judge? Or is it impartial? Or do they already know the winners?" Or, you know, it kind of pisses over people's Wheaties.
But to them, it's entertainment.
Yeah, but to me, it's just.
Right. But then you're building something, like your Restaurant Impossible. You're always building something that you're making this restaurant, like at the end you're like, okay, now it's a functioning business, you're building something, and that's guys like that. Like, you know, the other ones, all the housewives and all this stuff, it's just drama. They're not building anything. It's just women catfighting. That's the part of it.
Reality shows, I don't like any of those, but he likes Below Deck.
I like Below Deck.
I didn't want to see that.
I love the yachts. Yeah. I love the places they visit. And, you know, I've been not on those personal yachts, but I've been a chef on a cruise line. And I know it's the same kind of thing. Just a bigger line, a bigger boat.
You
than
like
it is.
Sailboats. And
I like all that. I do like, and the Below Deck, I do like that because sitting in cramped quarters and the relationships that go on there, and they're all like, you know, about shit happening. It's kind of funny to watch.
I don't know. Sometimes
Robert, you kind of, but you he knows that all too well, though. Like, you started, you were in the Navy, the Royal Navy, at 15 years old as a cook, right?
Yeah, I signed up at 15 and a half years old because my mother, I was a sea cadet, which is almost like a Cub Scout, if you like, but with water. My brother was in the air cadets, and there was always this rivalry. And then when I used to, my mother would go to school, and this is something you'll laugh at. My mother would go to work, I'd go to school. As she got on the bus, I would double back and drink beer all day in the house.
Very British.
Until one day she called the house, and I answered the phone like an idiot. And that was it. Recruitment office, boom, straight away. And I wanted to, my brother was in the Army at that point. My dad had been in the Army. I joined the Navy, and the best thing that could have ever happened to me, believe me. If I hadn't been in the military, I don't think I would be as successful as I am now, for sure.
It teaches you so many things. Yeah. Discipline and...
Discipline, teamwork.
Leadership.
Leadership.
Well.
All those things. Camaraderie. Yeah. Much like your... I don't know. I think like the wrestling business, but I think it's a little cutthroat in the wrestling business more than it is in the military, because the military is building teams. And tell me if I'm wrong, but I think that the wrestling business is about building yourselves, unless you're a tag team kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
The military was about, 26 guys that you worked with and making sure that nobody got shot, nobody got hurt, those kind of things. So I think that's what helped me, the military, for sure.
Yeah, wrestling's kind of, you still need the other person to succeed, right? And you want to work with the other person, and it's like, it is a team.
I'm going to Chavo and you, and I was never a wrestling fan. In my wrestling world in England was Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks.
Big Daddy, right?
That's how I grew up. And he was a copper, a police officer.
Yeah.
But that's how I respected him, because he had a real time job. Then he did his thing. Well,
it's like wrestling today, real job.
Yeah, but you can teach. Chavo can teach me to wrestle. Yeah. He can teach me to wrestle, I think. But he can't give me feeling and movement. He can't make that connect. Yeah. It's an innate.
Exactly.
He can say, do a move,
and
I can do it, but I couldn't sell it, and I couldn't. Yeah. I don't. There's an art to it.
Yeah, definitely. So.
100%. Yeah, for sure. I think the difference. I think in if you're in any kind of armed forces, it's structured. It's very structured, and in wrestling, a lot of times it's not structured. They can kind of do what they want to do whenever they want. As far as like the promoters and that kind of thing. But one thing I always compare it to, and not in a disrespectful way, but when we're in wrestling, some of my best friends of my entire life are basically the wrestlers, because we were like in the trenches together, and they were like, these guys would like basically live and die for me. Like, we had each other's backs no matter what. You'd like going through, and I hate to say it, but we'd be like going through a war, but totally different, because complete respect to the armed forces. You never like, and our wrestling wars are completely different than that. But the wars that, we're like, just like the wars of life. Togetherness, the wars of life, the wars of being away from your family, the wars against the promoters, we're brothers and banded together, right? Yeah. And that's like, there's like a bond, like Gail and I have this bond that we just got each other's backs.
Yeah.
It's funny,
even with wrestling fans, where they can be the biggest trolls that we have to deal with on earth. But then at the same time, if someone from outside our circle attacks the wrestling business, they're the first ones to attack them. And they're so loyal and hardcore and will go to war with us. But we'll still, once we're in our bubble,
they'll criticize us. Yeah.
It's like the military, the guy or girl to your left or to your right, and it wasn't girls, ladies, when I was in the military, it was, they were in there, but they weren't on ships, and they weren't in forward operating positions, but like it is today. But, it's the same thing. You have a brother, you watch my back, and I know that, and I use this analogy all the time when I teach people in business how to run their business, I teach them to close their eyes. you know, when we give you a rifle in the military, we let you take it apart in the dark, the wet, the cold, the snow, the heat, blindfolded. And the reason we do that is because you should be able to do it through memory. And that's the same with business. It's no different. That's how Jeff Bezos, that's how, you know, all these guys have become multi-billionaires, is because they can do it in their sleep and they're always thinking. Mm-hmm. Same with the military. How do I get out of this position? How do I make this? How do I get up the hill? How do I, you know, and all those questions.
Right. And then you're so big in doing benefits and supporting our military here in the U.S. It's awesome. I mean, every time I see you're raising more money for a, you know, fallen soldier, and you're doing so much other stuff, you know, going traveling to Afghanistan and right. Have you guys gone together doing that?
Is that from like brotherhood? Like, is that where it stems
I think,
from?
You know, when you, yeah, it's, listen, you've walked that line of, you know, I went to the Falklands, I've been shot at, I've been, you know, so I think when you look at modern day, you know, our country's been at war almost 19 years, right? So, and I know because we spend, you know, 150 days plus a year, I feed these men and women around the world, whether Afghanistan, Iraq, Poland, Spain, Korea, or any base in the United States, our companies feed them. So, or create the product that they use in special operations and all these other things. So for me, it's when I go to any base, whether it be in Poland or wherever, and I see somebody that I've seen there 5 years ago, and I would go and I say to Gail, and in fact, I tell this story all the time. A couple of years ago, I had a talk show. We were filming in
Burbank,
California, and I was doing 6 shows a day. So we did 180 episodes in 6 months. But I get a call from the chairman of Joint Chiefs saying, hey, I've got this crazy idea, Joe Dunford. I said, I'm in. And he said, well, you don't know what it is. It doesn't matter. We're going to go to Afghanistan. So I called Gail, and that was the first year we'd invited my mom and everybody from England to spend time at Disney. And she said, oh, did you forgotten people
oh,
to come
no.
in?
Well, you didn't say the time of year. So he's like, oh, he calls me and he goes, oh, Joe Dunford invited me to go to Afghanistan and Iraq, right? Mm. For Christmas to visit the troops. I'm like, your family's coming from Australia and your mom's here. Like, you're just going to leave them?
And I said,
yes. And so I said, okay, well, I want to go too. So then we ended up going on our first tour.
Which was probably some of the heaviest fighting in Mosul that we used to own. And then ISIS took it back and they were fighting. It was an airfield.
Yeah. It's pretty.
And I didn't want to take Gail, as tough as she thinks she is. A bullet will stop anybody. And it was a lot of fighting they were doing, building by building. And I called Joe Dunford hoping he was going to say no. And he said, yes. And then we end up in, you know, 3 days in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and, you know, little kids doing this when your armored vehicle goes past. And I think it was that time that Gail really figured out why I do what I do, you know, so.
Because I came from Canada, it wasn't like, we don't talk about the military. We don't, it's not, I always say it's not patriotic, but Canada is very patriotic. But in the military sense, I guess you don't grow up with that talk, or
they're not shoving it down your throat.
And obviously the American military is much bigger, I'm sure, right? And so I always supported him in all his causes for years, you know, and understood that was his passion and was there for him all the time. But I never seen it up close like that, and seen like how young the soldiers were and where they slept and how they lived. And it was my first, and the fact that they were we were there at Christmas, so they're missing their loved ones. And it was just amazing to just experience that, because it really opened up my eyes for the first time. You know,
where they were sleeping, conduit pipe, concrete pipes.
Like concrete, like with this curtain. And I thought I didn't know where we were walking to. And I was like, oh my God, wait, this is where they sleep? Yeah. I said, whoa, like this is hardcore.
Makes you appreciate it, right? I mean, it really makes you appreciate what our soldiers do for us.
It really, really did. Really, really did. And still continues to this day. So
Yeah, I definitely see how that would be something that you'd want you'd want your wife to see, but you don't want to put your wife in that situation.
Yeah.
You know, being a husband, you definitely don't want to.
Yeah. I guess because we were with...
Well, with a chairman, with a SEAL team and whatever protecting us. But, you know, it's still, you know, it's a war zone and it was a heavy war zone. Yeah. And I'd been in Afghanistan and Iraq, oh my God, since 2008.
Yeah.
So, wow. I mean, I remember the first time I went, my daughter then, Talia, was young, cost me $3,000 in phone bills because she was worried.
She was so worried. Now she's like getting used to it and she still worries. But when she was younger, it was a hard thing to deal with for her. So it was just a lot of reassurance and comforting.
Now, how did you two end up meeting?
So I'm sure we worked together at the time. We were, it was... SummerSlam, Los Angeles, although SummerSlam was always in Los Angeles.
Correct.
And at the time, okay, so, you know, we'd always go into Mark Carano's office. This was not when he was head of talent relations. This was when Johnny was. And we go in every TV and he would tell us what appearances we had for the month. And he left the office and I had never...
Like, never broke into his computer before, but she did.
I never did. Yeah. He left the office, so I'm like, oh, let me just scroll through and see what appearances are going
on. Like the nosy wife.
Let me go through his computer here. Let me just see him a second. Hold on a second.
Nosy wife is going to find something.
But it's not. He walked in, and he's like, what are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm just looking through all the appearances. And when I came back to the company, I remember filling out this form because they had these talent, I don't know who they were, but they basically asked you to fill in the form about your interests and so they could match up your interests with appearances. And so that was like when I started, this was like maybe a year later. I start looking through and I see, oh, Food Network, his show. And I saw like Big Show, Santino, Miz. And then I saw Taryn on it. And I was like, and then he walked in, he caught me and he asked me what I was doing. And I said, so I like the
Carano company. Carano caught you?
Yeah. And he's like, what are you doing? And I said, I'm looking through your thing. And I said, I filled out all that stuff. And I was like, I like the cooking. I want to do all the food stuff. And he's like, okay, well, we'll see if we can get you added. 2 weeks later, he gets me added. Then SummerSlam came and it was on the day of SummerSlam. So I also had a Battle Royal dark match. So Taryn ends up getting food poisoning the night before.
It's amazing what Visine drops in.
Why would I take her out?
Yeah, I'm just saying. It was so, it just happened like that, right?
And then I was already added to the show regardless. So you would have met two of us. So you would have had to choose between the Asian and the blonde.
Who knows?
Maybe you should have been married to Taryn.
No. Okay. I don't think so.
Anyways, and then, I mean, that was pretty much the first meeting.
So, tell the whole story. If you're going to tell it.
So Miz was with him from 6 a.m. or early. He was on it all day. I came in halfway through the day in the afternoon. So when I got on set, I went to go walk on set and he screamed, I'm not ready for her yet. Like in this terrifying yell. And I was like, oh my God. And the producer's like, okay, he's not ready. Then finally you brought me on. And the first thing he does is grab an apron and goes behind me and puts it on me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember.
I did the same to Miz. No, I'm kidding.
You weren't ready for her yet until you saw her. They're like, okay, now I'm ready for her.
Yeah, that's exactly true. She was wearing a purple short dress.
Oh my God.
I remember it like it was just there. One of my favorite dresses. And then an orange dress that I love.
He liked it because it was
short.
I mean, short.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was short.
Gail's
always looks in perfect. She's always in great shape. So, yes.
Then she would hear you. Face. So,
it's getting harder as we get older, though. I'll say
no,
that.
It's not. Not as well.
So during the day, I was saying to Miz, I was like, oh my God, I want him. Because he was just out of charge. And at the same time, he's saying to Miz, oh my gosh, she's so beautiful. Is this right? Is this an accurate story?
Yeah.
Because I think he told me that.
That's very true.
Okay. I never really asked you that part if that was true. And then Miss was like.
But so was everybody else. David and everybody else was looking at you. And I'm like, what are you doing? Just get back to work.
Oh, I didn't know this.
Let me look.
Let me look. So then, okay. So I get pulled off. We finished the show, but there were still people going on. I get pulled away because I had my dark match. I was just like, tell me what I'm doing in this match. I don't care if I get eliminated first. Got dressed, was told my spot, went out there, did it. And then during the show, I remember thinking we had to go to Las Vegas for Raw the next day. Mm-hmm. And back then, so they told us to drive. But back then, remember the rules, if it's like more than a certain 300 miles. Yeah, 300 miles. We could ask for flights. So mm-hmm. I was riding with Roka and Fox. And they're like, oh, we're going to fly to Vegas. Like, we're changing our flight. And I was like, oh, okay, we got to get out of here. So we're on a time limit. I knew he was coming back to get interviewed by Brawler. And so I was like, dang it. You know, like, how am I going to see him? And I was telling
So we finished the show. I snuck a kiss off her on her cheek.
On the cheek.
And then I went back to shower and change because I was going to do WWE stuff. And she was waiting at the end, at the bottom of this driveway
at the Staples Center. We got our cars valeted at the inside to the arena, so we're waiting for cars to catch our flight, me, Fox, and Roka. And I was like, dang it, I'm not gonna be able to, I can't find him, blah, blah, blah. Who starts walking down the ramp? Him and his business partner at that time. And I was like, guys, there he is. And then he came up and we tried to have a conversation, but he turned lobster red from like shyness, embarrassment, I don't know.
And shyness, not embarrassment.
Okay.
Why would I be embarrassed?
And then his partner at the time was like, are you going to thank Gail, you know, for today? And he's like, yeah, thanks. And trying to like take off. And so his partner goes, oh, can we get your email so that we can send you a cookbook? And then we just kind of did it that way from that point on.
6 weeks.
Yeah.
Cooking naked with Robert. That's the cookbook.
We talked for like on the phone for at least six weeks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To get to know each other. Yeah. That's the way to do it, guys. You get to know the girl first.
It's very true. And I tried every trick in the book and it didn't work. Believe me. Took me forever.
Too much information.
No, I'm just being honest.
Public.
Yeah.
TMI.
But when it eventually happened, it was pretty awesome.
Oh my God.
You can tell them. Be real.
For her or for you?
It was great for me. Hey, isn't it supposed to be about me?
Yeah.
She just wants to kiss us, so it's okay.
Yes.
Robert, you end up, you're in the Royal Navy, you're a chef, you're in a different country. How did, like we talked about earlier, it's very hard to break into anything in like Hollywood here. It's tough to get in there. How did you end up becoming like celebrity chef in a sense?
Well, it's really interesting because I worked for Donald Trump for 4 years. I was running his casino
in Atlantic City
for
Trump Casino.
Yeah, Taj Mahal. And I reported directly to him. Funny enough, I came from Jamaica. I flew in for a day, cooked for him, flew out, but he offered me a job immediately. I came shortly after that, started as the executive sous chef in charge of this, you know, huge casino doing $784 million a year in revenue. I was the number two in charge. And I told him if I wasn't the number one within a year, I'd be gone. Pretty ballsy, really, but I did. And to that day, exactly a year later, I become the number one guy. I was pretty well known as a hatchet guy. So if you've seen that movie, Roadhouse, right? I fired 300 people in my first year. It was pretty hilarious because we would have truckloads of crab legs. And at that point, and there's a reason I'm telling the story, because crab legs, Alaskan king crab, were $1.75 a pound. Now you can't get them for less than, you know, $20 a pound. But we had a truck back up, the cab leave. I went down to check them literally from my office. The truck had gone. Somebody backed up another truck to the trailer and took it. I mean, just gone, disappeared. It was, and Atlantic City was like that. It was all, just ridiculous. And, you know, I had death threats every day. My car was trashed like Roadhouse. literally, I had a Honda Civic, and never forget it. And that's how I started my career. As a young kid, taking care of this casino, I got on really well with Trump because he allowed me to do my job, right? I made a lot of money. I moved to a casino, but when I told him I was leaving, he gave me 15 minutes to leave, literally pack up and get out. I started another casino.
He likes loyalty.
Yeah, did another casino. Did the same thing. Found I was pretty good at this business stuff. Started a company. And while I was at Trump, I would do local shows, local TV, you know, 5-minute cooking, 4-minute cooking, da da da. And then one day I was hosting a show in Atlantic City, a food and wine festival. And I asked Mark Summers, who, however I got his name, Double Dare Mark Summers,
right,
to come and watch, and said, hey, if there's something, do you think I can do? Great. If not, then I won't do it, you know? So for months and months after that event, he kept saying to me, you know, I don't know what the show is. I don't know what the show is. And eventually I just wrote, ideas of things that I wanted to do and things that I'd already done. So I was going to the White House 2 days a week cooking for 41, 42, 43, 44.
Wow.
So I incorporated that. I was going on aircraft carriers. All the things I did, I just wrote down, and it became a show, Dinner Impossible, which was 140 episodes of just, you know, getting a mission and achieving that mission, just like I did in the military. So that was an instant hit. Then came Restaurant Impossible, which was an even bigger hit. I think that's what kind of put me on the bigger stage than, you know, talk shows and all the other things. And here we are. We've now got 4 shows, dinner, restaurant,
Robert's
a cooking
the
show.
Hardest working man I've ever met. And so, I mean, I've met a lot of hardworking people. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I can count them all on one hand.
So that's how, you know, I think if you really want something, you can achieve it. But it's going to take a lot of work to get there. And the relationships I'm getting the relationships that I started 10, 12 years ago are coming to fruition now in very other things. Mm-hmm. And the people you meet, and I said this to you earlier, the people you meet and these things that you do are going to set you up for success, because eventually they know what you're talking about. They like you. Mm-hmm. They give you a chance. You prove it. And then, you know, it's kind of a snowball effect. Pretty much like resin, I suppose, right? You know, you get your opportunity and you shine or you don't.
And I think that's what we're missing in the world right now, is that people don't want to put the work in and put that sacrifice in. Anything is attainable, but you do have to work for it. And it's sacrifice, for sure. You have to sacrifice whatever you're doing in your life to achieve that goal. I mean, that's what we're missing. And that's what separates, you know, the good from the great, is that work ethic. You see everybody who's super successful, you know, those guys are the hardest workers in the room.
Yeah.
You look at Michael Jordan, you look at Kobe Bryant, you look at Dwayne Johnson, you look at, you know,
Cena.
This man, those guys are, they're just hard. They don't sleep. They're just workers, work hard, you know, and that's what I think.
But we're asking for more things now. It's not just a work ethic. Now it's you know, and I know you guys have worked with The Rock, and I've watched from afar of his career and what he's done, right? And I know you're there working with him right now, but for me, it's what you give back, right? That is, for me, the measure of success. I don't care whether you make $20,000, $10,000, if you're giving back time and money and commitment to other people less fortunate than you, that's when you become successful, because it's not about you anymore. Mm-hmm. And it starts off as you. And I'm the first one to say, listen, when I got my first TV show, I was making $4,000 an episode. I was like, oh my God, I won the jackpot. I'm getting caught. You know? I was like, not only rich, but I'd made it, right?
Yeah.
And then you suddenly realize, because there's something takes over your brain or your body or something, I don't know what it is, and you become the complete opposite of what you wanted to become when you become successful. And you don't realize that until after that. In other words, you become a bit of an asshole, right? And
yeah, sure.
And you don't realize that until people start looking at you, and then eventually somebody might say something, whatever. And I find now my biggest advice to people is just do your job, have fun, be nice to everybody that you meet.
Yeah.
Be respectful, honorable, offer help no matter what it is. If it's a dishwasher, if it's a bus driver, if it's a, just be nice, because when you move along your journey of life, no matter what it is, all three of us, you're going to come across people that know somebody that knows somebody else that know this guy. And I find it more and more now than, you know, I was 55 a week or so ago. I find it more now than ever before that somebody knows somebody, and that's how I get jobs.
Yeah, it's true. You know, and it's, they say sometimes it's not what you know, it's who you know, but it's not true. It's who you have good relationships with that you get the opportunity, and then your talent, you bring that talent to the table. Mm-hmm. So I totally see that. And giving back, I'm a huge giver backer. I'm a giver backer. But I agree with that. It's definitely, and you see the same people. You don't know who's going to be your boss next week in this business. You don't know. So the same people you see on the way up, you see on the way down, they say. But I know people that I just see that were really, you know, whether they be PAs or whatever, next thing you know, they're executive producing a show. Yeah. And you're like, ah, I should have been cool to that person. You know, that's too late. You just lost out on your job.
You're absolutely right. So I have a rule. I have a rule in my restaurants, and we have 11 companies, and we have 2,864 employees, right? And my rule is I'll say hello and I'll be nice, but I never get involved with the people until they've been there a couple of months, or, you know, they've been there longer, because I don't know if they're going to make it. It's the same with production people. I've had the same production people on Restaurant Impossible for 12 years. My PAs have changed because, and when I started my talk show, we went on a hiatus with Restaurant Impossible. And I hired, and it's so funny, I called Jason, and I said, one of my producers, I said, hey, I've got this talk show. It's going to be kind of fun, I think. I don't know. But, you know, pack up your stuff and leave your home and move to LA.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, what are you, nuts? I'm like, no, trust me. I'm going to make sure you're okay. And he said, no. And if it wasn't for my other supervising producer said, you're stupid. You got to go. He literally packed up his kids on a Friday. In a van, drove to LA. He's now executive producing his own shows, and he's.
That's the one thing Robert has always been very loyal. What you just said is the relationships you build, and he brings the people from show to show to show because he knows they're going to deliver.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it's very hard to find people that have your passion, because no one's going to have your passion for your project like you are. But once you do find those people that are pretty close to that they're, it's the acceptable passion. Like, okay, this person believes in what I believe in, and just they have that work ethic. Okay, they're with me. I can't lose this person.
I nurture those people, and I've got a great bunch of people, and we're about to go into, you know, Dinner Impossible is coming back. It's not a secret. Next week we start filming, and I've taken all these people over the time and moved them over here, and we've got a cooking channel show, and we've got another streaming show. We've got a lot going on. But I believe in giving opportunities. I took, for 7 years, this one camera guy worked for me, Jesse, and he said to me, I said, what are your goals? What do you want to do? And he says, I want to direct, right? Just like you. And I said, okay. So he went out and bought his own cameras, his own drone, his own, you know, specific things that he likes. We paid for them at the end. It was like pulling teeth to get that done. But anyway, he's now directing, and he's directed probably 20, 30 of my shows. And he's been amazing to the point that I told you about Brandon Braga, our dear friend. He's like, oh, I'll give you a job. I'm like, no, you're not taking him. So I believe in that opportunity, but when you get the opportunity, you've got to work as hard as I'm working to give you the opportunity. You know, so
yeah, right. I see that. Now, Gail, as long as I've known you, I don't really know your story. How did you get into the wrestling business? Because I'm a third generation pro wrestler with a wrestling ring. Grew up with a wrestling ring in my backyard. it's impossible to get involved in this business and make it. I mean, you can go to do something at the high school gym or whatever, I get it, but to actually make it in this business and learn this business, it's an art form. It's impossible. Who trained you?
So Ron Hutchison trained me, same as Trish, mm-hmm. Christian, Edge, all those people. So basically I watched wrestling when everyone watched it, you know, in the 80s, 90s. But I did miss Attitude Era, surprisingly. Everyone's always shocked by that. But I did miss the whole Attitude Era. I watched it when everyone watched it, when Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, everybody was the big stars, Bret Hart and everyone. And then I stopped watching when I was like high school, I would say. And then...
You went to high school?
I went to high school. I got straight A's. Oh, not near the end, actually. So then I was just changing channels. I remember one day... in college, we call it university in Toronto.
University. And
it was a storyline with Test and Stephanie and Hunter, where the wedding, do you remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that. Sure, and of course.
Strangely, because I'm so like more about the sport of wrestling, I got caught up on that storyline. And at the same time, that's when the women's the division was flourishing. It was like Jazz, Trish, Lisa, Ivory, you know, just Lita. It was the women's division was actually women's wrestling. And I got so obsessed, like, oh my God, look at these girls. And I fell in love with Molly because I felt like she just moved so differently than any of them. And she was
absolutely
my favorite. Yeah. And then I was just like, they don't have an Asian girl, you know? And I think that was like literally around the time of internet just kind of happening, like the dial up and stuff. And I found a wrestling school in Toronto, weirdly. I don't even know what I was looking for. And I was like, wrestling school? And then I saw Trish and Edge and Christian were all training there. I'm like, oh, I think I'm just going to do it. Because I was always very spontaneous. And so I told my parents, who are very traditional Korean parents, marry a doctor or lawyer or you become a doctor or lawyer. And I said, okay, I'm going to school. And I lied, which I dropped out, which I shouldn't have, but I did. And I took my tuition money and I said, I'll just tell them when I get signed. So in that time, my headspace was that, oh, I'm going to make it in a year. Like I didn't know how long it took to get good but I did get signed in 2 years, which was miraculous.
Still unheard of. That's unheard of.
I was very lucky. I was very green. I just had a really great tryout match where Nydia and I just had incredible chemistry right off the bat, which, you know, I love her to death and always have.
Me too.
We just had a killer match. She gave me a killer match and they wanted to sign me that day. And I mean.
And she was very green too. She was very green, very young. Also, Nydia, she was the tough enough, you know, original girl. And was still very green also. So for you two to be two green people having a great match, that says a lot.
No, it was, we always had this incredible chemistry. I don't know if it's because of we were friends then. We didn't know, she was just very open. And Molly was doing the tryout match with Tracy and Beth. So Molly was just blown up. So she's just like, hey, Nydia, can you have this match with Gail? And just turned out great. And then, I mean, I obviously wasn't ready, but getting thrown through it, I believe, taught me so much more, right?
Yeah, none of us were ready. When I first started wrestling, thank God, my tryout match with WCW was with Steve Regal.
Okay.
And Regal was so smooth and so great. It was friends with Eddie and my family. So he asked to work with me in WCW. He goes, I'll work with the kid, and made me look like $1 million. I didn't know what I was doing. He got me the job. And I still say this to this day, and he keeps wanting a percentage of my money. He keeps saying, I still need my 10%, but it's true. He made me look way better than I was, got the job and did like the on the job training, you know. But
so how long were you in WCW for?
Four years more. I was there from 96 to then they got bought by WWF at the time and then came over to WWF.
Mm-hmm. I always said, I'm like, I wish I came up in the WCW years because you guys all made.
Right? Yeah. Well, everybody made, you know, the big people made. It's just the same. It was the same. Okay. Certain people made a lot of money. We were all, you know, kind of right here. They were all up here. But we didn't care. We were just young. What's that?
We had cars and hotels covered.
No.
No? No.
Only certain people did.
Oh.
As we started getting old, like from 96 to 2000, it changed completely. But by 98, certain people were getting hotels and rental cars paid for. So Eddie and Dean and Chris, he came in together. Everybody paid for their own stuff. Eventually, Eddie, Dean, and Chris, they got their hotels and rental cars paid for. So me and Eddie just were together all the time. So it was like, I got my hotels and rental cars paid for.
Yeah. Of course, yeah. So one friend that has it.
Right? Exactly. And then we just, you know, we all kind of just use that. But they took a while to get that. It wasn't like people think that they just paid for everything. And they didn't. Okay. Eventually, they started to, and that's what happened to the company.
I know. It's so funny because Robert will always make fun because I'll share a room with Christy or whoever, Lisa. And I'm like, what? That's normal. Like, we all room together. Like, that's what we did to save money. The mentality of a wrestler was so different. Well, he's, why are you being so cheap?
So he's looking at it from like Hollywood, and we're looking at it as wrestlers, two different things. When I'm on set and I'm talking to my actors or actresses, on Glow, for instance, they could not believe that we would pay for our rental cars, our hotels, our own outfits, and all the stuff that we had to take care of. They couldn't believe it. So now, being part of the Screen Actors Guild, I'm like, this is amazing because somebody taking care of me. This is awesome. Could it be better at times? Yeah, sure, of course. But I mean, coming from a business that doesn't have a union to a business with a union, night and day. Mm-hmm. And the work ethic that we have as wrestlers, they can't work me hard enough in Hollywood. Like sometimes I'm doing a 12-hour day and you're just pushing through it. And they're like, oh, you know, really appreciate your work. I'm like, you don't understand where we came from. This is nothing. This is a day off.
I feel the same way when we do the same thing. And I'm part of the SAG and AFTRA and whatnot. But I did, and I've done a couple of other things that are scripted shows, and I'm still getting paid for them that I did 12, 15 years ago with residuals, which I'm like, what is this? Because, you know, we don't normally get that stuff. And, you know, it's a different world. And that's why I always say to Gail, oh, I should be your agent because you're not doing that.
He always yells at me saying I don't get paid enough. And I was, I mean, we can go into a whole conversation about that.
We won't because it drives me crazy because I think what you and I've always said this, you know, I've been to WWE, I've been to Impact, you know, I've seen some wrestling. And for me, when you see kids and you see the faces when they see their favorite people and they get a t-shirt or they get a lollipop or an ice cream or whatever it is, a hot dog, and you see their sheer amazement at the things that you do, jumping off a rope, going through a table, all the things that you know, like Batman does in a comic, right? And they're seeing it live. It's such a great art form for kids and such a great thing for them to see. And then you think of the business model, right? Because I'm a business guy, I think, how do they get away with these things for years and years and years when you could never really do that, you know? So I would love to go. And the best time I ever had was when they would do the weekend shows with Impact.
The house shows. Live events.
And I loved them. I would just get in the car and go, and I would be just a fly on the wall and watch the people in a field, and maybe only 30, 100, 200, whatever the number was. Yeah. They were just enamored with these folks coming out. And I never, there's a handful of wrestlers that I really like, and then the rest I don't. For no other reason than I don't know them. And I'll say, oh, look at this attitude. Look at this attitude. She'd say, oh, it's part of their story. It's part of their thing. But it always amazes me at the work ethic, because you've got to stay fit. You've got to stay on top of the game, because if not, somebody's going to take your spot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I just had a conversation, and I just did a podcast with Andrew Yang. Great guy, super cool guy, big wrestling fan, but he's really big on getting rid of the independent contractor status for wrestlers.
Oh my god, I saw his tweets, dude.
He's huge, and we were talking about that, and so like literally he's just a guy that's like, this is, we have to bring this out of the dark ages. As awesome as wrestling is, which is, it is awesome. It's a great business. Could be crappy at times, but it's a publicly traded company now. We have WWE worth $3.3 billion. And not to get into it too much, but it's time to start taking care of the wrestlers like that in a certain sense.
I have to tell you, I was, you know, when John Oliver did his piece, I was really happy with that because he brought a little bit of attention, but it wasn't going to create any change. It's a blip on the radar again. Like, look at Vice, you know, you were part of that. Their dark, what was Dark Side of the Ring?
Dark Side of the Ring,
exposing everything and still nothing. Mm-hmm. Someone who has a voice for us, like Andrew, that can actually create a real change, he's our savior. That's why I was saying, I'm like, wow, this man is amazing. I already was part of the Yang Gang before that. But that just put it over the top for me. I was just like, he's a good
midnight player. The other night, she waited till Andrew Yang got on CNN to talk.
Well, after the VP debate, I was like, oh, Andrew just tweeted he's going to be on AC, so I'm gonna stay up and watch.
You know, and Robert, you'd like him because he's such a big, he's a huge entrepreneur, but he's huge in creating avenues for young people to learn how to be in business and create business, not just work for a business, to create their own business.
He
started a whole foundation of that.
I know a lot of people that know him. The one thing I've been blessed with in this military space is I've got to meet so many senators and so many presidents and so many things on people that have influence. And no matter what happens in the next election, these people that have all these amazing attributes are going to use them and continue to use them in public service to change the narrative on young people and the things that happen. And he's one of them. And there's a lot more, believe me, that are coming to the forefront now. So I think it's a good time. And I think you're right when you say about the dark ages. It's a public traded company. It's a profession. It is. And they should have a union, and they should be taken care of, just like actors, just like, you know, there should be equal opportunities and all those things that go along with that. So it's a good time right now, I think.
Yeah, there needs to be a lot of changes that need.
Yeah, for sure. We'll see if we can do some changes on that, you know, now being out of the business in a sense. Hey, and in your wedding too, so, which was really cool to see and how, what a small world it is. Your best man was Guy Fieri.
Yeah.
Right. You're still good friends with Guy.
Very close with Guy. Yeah.
So, but I was I was that came out wrong.
Yeah.
I was working with his wife, or actually working with this girl, Lori. We worked at TGI Fridays together. And for a long time, and she came from Rhode Island, and she had this, you know, this accent, and just was this East Coast vibe, you know, super cool girl. We were really close, really good friends, and we used to go shoot pool all the time and just hang out. And we had like a big bunch of people that would hang out. And then I remember when she started dating this person, this guy in a sense, and he was just he was a cook, worked at a restaurant, you know. And I remember, hey, what's up? How you doing? And then, you know, you lose track, things go awry, you know, and, she, you know, I went my way, she went her way, and we didn't really talk to him. There was before Facebook and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden I was talking to somebody that was mutual friends, and they're like, Guy Fieri, right? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, that's Guy. I go, Guy? Yeah, like, remember Lori's boyfriend, Guy? I said, yeah. That's Guy Fieri, because he didn't look like that. He had dark hair.
Yeah, well, that was so funny. And I tell this story because he didn't have he wasn't wearing shorts and he wasn't wearing blonde hair and he didn't put it on his head like that. That was a very smart gimmick to get noticed on Food Network Star. And I was a judge on Food Network Star at that time. And I got to know Guy right at the beginning of his career. And spend a lot of time with him. So that was funny, because if you look at the old pictures, you probably did see him. He didn't look like Guy Fieri is today.
I've never seen him with dark hair.
Oh, completely different guy. And
That's why I didn't recognize him though. I never put two and two together. Sure, I'd seen Guy Fieri on, you know, on TV and stuff, and But I didn't put two and two together. And then when I looked at him, like somebody pointed out, I looked at him and go, oh my God, that's Guy. Like he was with Party back in the day, you know? Yeah. So funny. And then just to kind of reunite and see Lori again at your wedding. And that was really cool. In fact, I just went to Vegas with the TGI Friday gang.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
About 10 of us kind of got together and said, hey, so meet in Vegas. Because it was a good time in our lives. You know, we're just all of us hanging out, just having fun. We're young people, and you know, exploring and learning about the world. And about 10 of us all went to Vegas and hung out, and Lori was one of them. It was really, really cool just kind of hang out and have fun. Yeah,
she is.
They're just good people.
They are.
Good people. Absolutely. Yeah. Good people. That's what you said. Good people hang out with good people, you know?
That's too funny. I remember you telling me that story, and I told him that the first time I met him.
Yeah, you know. So tell me about Fit Crunch.
Wow. Fit Crunch. So it's so funny. I was doing a live show, a theater show that I have, and it's basically audience participation. It's all my shows wrapped into one. It's a 2-hour theater show in Pittsburgh. And the show was sold out. And I get an email from a guy named Sean Perrick. I need VIP tickets. My kids are in love with you. They're little girls. And I said, oh, yeah, give me a call, whatever. So he did. And he says, I make protein bars. And I said, yeah, okay, dude, whatever. You know, it wasn't really. So anyway, normally before our shows, we have a couple of tequilas. And after the show, we have a lot more tequila. But his kids came in and his kids were just adorable. I mean, they were like picture perfect kids. Yeah. Both dancers, both looking little like 6 or 8 year old kids. Yeah, I can't remember how old they were at the time. And I just sat on the floor and I played with them because I needed a distraction. And I played with them for 2 hours, and then all of a sudden we got to get up and go and do the show. So I said, I'll come back afterwards, and you know, after the show. So the show was a tremendous success, as most of them are, all of them are. And he came back after. He said, I want to show you some protein bars and da da da. So I ended up, long story short, becoming a partner with him. Thinking that it was going to be my name and we'd make a protein bar. Well, it doesn't work like that in the real world. After putting in $1 million to build a protein bar, and we had very different ideas. He wanted muscle heads and I wanted families because, you know, that's where the money is. And I meant that because my girls would make, you know, in general public instead of a small niche thing. So we started, and the first bar we created, was a caramel peanut butter, but we couldn't get the machines to make the caramel go onto the bar. And if you imagine 7 years ago, we were doing everything by hand. We were doing 70,000 bars a day, 18 people, three lines. We now do 300,000 a day.
By machine.
So we took, so we decided to change the formula. We had the baked bar and whatever. And I never forget it. I had some, you talk about knowing people. I knew Doug McMillon at Walmart. So I end up getting a hold of Doug saying, hey, we got this great bar. You got to try it. And he's like, yeah, great. Love it. Try it. We got all the stores. Well, we couldn't produce, we couldn't produce food. We couldn't, it's just produce impossible enough, to produce the number because it was literally a cookie that was part baked, and then people were putting stuff on, we'd enrobe it, cool it, and then put it into bags. It didn't work. I had to go back and say, well, you know, when we get it right. So it took us a year to get a machine that's 400 feet long, 10.3 million to build it. It's one of a kind. It's the only one in the world. And it bakes, da da da. So now we're in 85,000 retail locations in the States, and then every country after that.
Like, I see them everywhere now.
Yeah,
they're everywhere. Hey, when I was at I love Costco. So when I was at Costco and I saw them, I was like, yes, I took a picture, tweeted it out, and sent it to you guys. But yeah,
we just launched an apple pie, which is number one bar on Amazon right now. But you know, the beautiful thing about it is it's great flavor. Then Gail wouldn't eat it because it's chocolate and sweet.
No, that's not why. Because there's milk in it and I have a dairy allergy.
Oh, okay. And it's sweet and you don't like it. And
I like sweet.
Gail doesn't do that. So we created a bottle.
She's a very bitter person. Yes.
Yeah.
I just like my flavor palette. Yeah.
So we just created a new bar line called Fit Bar, which is all GMO, vegan, yeah. da da da. Yeah. That just launched 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And it's doing extremely well. And the beautiful thing about everything that we do is the money that we make from that goes into our foundation that builds homes, buys dogs mm-hmm. for post-traumatic depression, you know, all those kind of things.
Yeah.
So what started off as, you know, it could make it or it couldn't, you know, we're going against the quest of the world and the, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And right. now it's, I think, the number three bar in the world. So in 7 years.
That is so awesome.
Yeah.
That is so awesome. I mean, I just love that.
When my boys succeed, you know, for me, it's everything to me. Like, I'm not one of those guys that's like, you know, you see people and you're like, oh, they made it. You know, why did they make it and not me? I'm like, that's awesome. Like, there's room for all of us.
Yeah. And it goes back to what you said before, though, Jabo. You know, listen, I didn't know it was going to succeed. It was so funny. We create this bar. And at the end of the shows, wherever we were in Chicago or wherever, I would then spend the extra 4 hours. I would go to a Costco or go to try and sell the bar. And that's how we started this off. And, you know, it's become successful. Then we started a food line. Then we started a liquor company. Then, we, you know, and they've all been very successful, not because somebody gave it to us, because we work every day for it. You know?
Yeah, you work for it. And it's that's
yeah,
that's the missing ingredient. And even when you do work for it, sometimes it's not successful. Yeah. But yeah, that's the number one thing is working for it. Yeah, people get lucky every once in a while, sure. But for the most part, you got to put the time in.
It's just, I feel like, not to say there aren't hard workers in this generation. It's just this, mm-hmm. our society now moves faster, more instant gratification. Mm-hmm. And that's what people are used to, right? So people just don't want to work as hard. They want to take the shortcuts.
But I'll be honest, when we started Fit Crunch, I was the same way. I'm like, oh, we can make money fast. There is no, unless you're a tech genius and you create something that everybody needs, there's no money fast, you know. Mm-hmm. It's hard work, it's pounding pavements, it's what makes your product different. And I just opened the open call for Walmart worldwide on innovation. So Walmart has this amazing so if you come up with your program, if you come up with something and you want to sell it Walmart, you know, you can go and sell it to Walmart as an independent guy, which they never did before. So I just did that with a CEO and opened it. And it's so amazing to watch small companies have a niche, you know, it could be a spoon, a cup, a water, whatever it is. Tell me about your product. What makes it different? You know, and the good thing is they're giving you a fair price. They're not nickel and diming you. So Walmart's doing a great job in that. And, you know, and I don't work for Walmart. I just sell to Walmart and a lot of other places, but it's nice to see that they're taking care of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. We look at their successful business model. They're doing something right. You know, their biggest, you know, chain in the world. So totally get it. You know, you guys, because we're friends, and I say this about this podcast, it's my favorite part of the podcast, is able to connect with my friends again and talk because we can't see each other right now. But because we're friends, we're always, we could talk for 4 hours, but I don't keep you guys too long here for sure. We do this little thing on Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo. That's just like kind of a rapid fire questions at the end. And, it's really easy, quick ones. There's no right or wrong answers. It's just for your fans to kind of know you a little bit.
Someone asked me to sing on one of their things at the very end.
That's not a rapid question.
It was a question. I don't know what it was. It was at the end of the rapid round. It was Taylor, and she's like, something like sing something. And I was like, oh my God, no, I can't just say. I just can't sing.
Sing.
I got you coming. I can sing.
All right. So are you vintage cars or new cars?
Me? Oh, you're asking about
both of you.
Me, I'm new.
New cars. Yeah. Working out, are you like CrossFit people or are you weights?
Weights.
Are you cook in or eat out?
Eat out or when I'm by myself, cook in.
Eat out.
Who does the cooking at home?
Me.
Wow, look at that.
She's really good at
everybody
it, too.
Everybody always is like, what's it like yeah, having she's a chef really good at home? And I'm like, well, he doesn't really cook.
When I come home, I wish you could see. You've got to come to our house. But yeah. But if you look, I'm going to move it. Oh, what did I just do?
Can you see us?
Yeah, you're fine. You're totally fine.
Right here? No, that's not.
No, I did
see. If you look at the left hand with the cursor, there's video.
No, oh, he took it off something completely.
No, don't.
What?
I can see. I can see you fine.
Okay, we can't see. Let me turn that.
There we go. Yeah.
So watch. So this island, it's a huge island.
Oh, wow! Yeah.
Took a year to make this kitchen, because I thought, we'd have the best kitchen ever. I only cook for TV in here, or I don't ever. Very rarely have I cooked in this kitchen. My book. That's it. Gail cooks every meal than most of the meals when we're home.
You helped last night a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I got I tried a new dish and I was getting a little flustered because he's like, why didn't you get the ice water to blanch this? And I was like, I didn't know I had to do that. And I'm trying to do three things at once. So then he helped me at the end.
Love it. Love it. I know Gail is a little bit, but are you any fight fans at all?
In like MMA kind of thing?
Yeah. Are you an MMA or boxing?
I like both. So I've done a lot of tours and I have a lot of friends who are MMA fighters, but I like the art of boxing.
Right. Sweet science, for sure. I agree.
Yeah. But I like to watch MMA when like Chris Weidman and all these guys.
People
I know.
Yeah. Because he doesn't follow it. Really,
I don't follow it every day, but the people I know when they're fighting, the Blessed and all these guys I've been on tour with, I love to watch them because I like to support them.
Yeah. That sounds good. And tacos, when you eat tacos, are you soft shell tacos or hard shell tacos?
Soft for me, for sure.
I don't eat tacos.
What?
You're fajita. What?
Very rarely do I, I shouldn't say that. Let me retract that. I shouldn't say that because I just was at Taco Bell, the headquarters, and everybody has this, and that's why I retracted that. Sure. Everybody has this thing about Taco Bell, and I've got to tell you, some of the best food I ever had from Taco Bell was a couple of months ago before COVID started, or 7 months ago. I went up there, and it was amazing. I don't normally go to taco shops.
Yeah.
Gail will all the time.
Yeah.
But I don't mind if we're in a place a la fajitas and but it will always be flour.
Yeah, I like flour too. Not that you ask flour or corn, but
yeah. Yeah. Well, whatever. It doesn't matter. You're the ones telling it's your fans here. So, beer or wine?
I have one of the largest wine collections in my house, and I drink a lot of beer.
So beer, wine.
Nice. Tequila or bourbon?
Tequila!
That's yes. Like not even a question. You can. Everyone knows that answer.
I'm here in Australia, and outside of the U.S. and Mexico, they're not big, huge tequila drinkers. But there is a friend of mine here is taking me to a tequila bar here, and I saw a picture of the bar. And I said, "Oh wow, there's." Several different good tequilas here to choose from. So tonight, not tonight, when I get out of quarantine, which is tomorrow, we're going to do that. So
you got to tell us how The Rock's tequila is too.
Yeah. I haven't had it yet, but I'm sure I will be having that real soon.
I saw that.
The Terramana. Yeah. Stallone or Arnold?
Arnold.
I'm an Arnold guy. I mean, I love Stallone, of course, but Arnold, because I grew up pumping iron, and I, the pumping iron.
He used to make his protein bar.
Oh, you did?
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I do a lot with his after school program, and when we have a magazine, Robert Irvine magazine, and he gave me three pictures that have never been published in history to use. Amazing human being, philanthropist beyond. Philanthropy.
Yeah.
Just every time I go to Olympia or wherever, always makes time to come and see to our booth and just good guy.
Yeah, we like
Robert. You're looking good.
Yeah.
I love. He's a good guy, right?
Yeah.
So charismatic. So he walks in the room and he's got that big, 1,000-watt smile, and he walks in.
Yeah. It's so funny to watch him, you know, he I know his assistants and we've known him for years, and he walks into a room and you're right. And when I did the Gold's Gym thing in Vegas, the big whatever.
It was the Gold's Gym convention.
It was the 50th anniversary of Gold's Gym, and I got to talk to him. I got to preach and do my thing, but it was pretty funny.
He just seems cool with all his animals in his backyards with his cigar. And
so he's just a good dude, man. He just, he's one of the boys. He's just one of the boys. He likes to hang out.
And I went to Mecca, and him and Lou Ferrigno, you know, I walk into Mecca, and luckily now, you know, they, because of what I do with goals, he's there, and
I feel like it's just amazing. The Mecca, you can see anyone working out.
Yeah.
Look, anybody listen, the Mecca is the original Gold's up in Venice Beach.
Yeah.
In Venice Beach, California. And you know what's cool about that is that you can see them walk. You see Arnold working out there. You see the
I got a $90 ticket because I was in awe that Lou Ferrigno was walking past my, I just dumped the car. I went into the gym and I came out the ticket. I had a ticket on the window, $90.
That's so funny. Meanwhile, we're doing conventions with Lou Ferrigno every year.
Yeah.
A couple times.
He still looks good.
Yeah.
He still looks good. And he's a big SOB. I met him when he was doing the Hulk. Yeah. You know, in growing up in Southern California, he was doing the Hulk TV show. So he was just massive and huge. He's a big man anyways. So we're walking through this old it was called Ollie's, and Ollie's was like a Home Depot back then.
Yeah.
They were like smaller, and he was walking through there, and me and my dad were walking through there, and they just started talking because my dad was a wrestler and blah, blah, blah. And I just was looking up this big, huge, massive man going, oh my God, that's Lou Ferrigno. That's the Hulk.
Real life superhero.
Yeah. And the last one, are you burgers or pizza?
I would say pizza more than burger. I'm not a big burger.
Well, I guess I don't eat red meat anymore, so I guess pizza. Cheeseless pizza.
Well, there's the Impossible Burgers. I eat those all the time.
Honestly, I do like meat alternatives, but sometimes they taste weird a little bit.
Sometimes they get a little weird for sure. You got to be careful. But some of them aren't bad. Some of them are good. So where can they find you guys on what's going on? What do you got going on right now, and where can they find you?
We're getting ready to go film next week, Tuesday. Then get me at Robert Irvine on Twitter, at Chef Irvine on
Instagram. And what are you on Facebook, Robert Irvine?
At Chef Robert Irvine or something. I don't know. I don't even do that. I just do Twitter.
He does his own Twitter.
I do my own Twitter. Yeah. So you can tell because I can't spell anything and it's one continuous sentence. That's when you know it's me. But yeah, lots of TV, lots of great products, lots of serving our military.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that's
I'm still
it.
Doing my Impact Wrestling thing, doing the kayfabe thing.
Yeah.
To you about later. And also, you can find me, Gail Kim, it's me, for Twitter and Instagram.
Awesome.
And really exciting. I know you're there with The Rock, but The Rock's company is following Phil Heath. Phil Heath is a very dear friend of mine.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, really?
For Mr. Olympia. We'll be there at Christmas to watch him take the number 8.
Incredible.
He will. He's looking amazing. But Rock's company is doing Seven that. Bucks so that's going to be really exciting.
Doing the documentary for him.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah.
They're doing it right now as we speak. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool.
Really? That's all. Yeah. Phil's, he's amazing, man. There's always those generations of, you know, those bodybuilders, you know, you had Arnold, you had Lee Haney, then you went to Dorian Yates.
Ronnie Coleman.
And then now you got, you know, Heath. Yeah, for sure. Hey, I appreciate you two very much taking time out of your day talking. It was great catching up. My friends, for sure.
So really glad you're doing what you're doing and kicking ass, Chavo.
And enjoy the tequila tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And enjoy Down Under for a while.
Because it's much safer there, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, you have to come in, especially Brisbane, the Queensland, you have to 2-week quarantine. You come from even from a different state, you have to 2-week quarantine. But so then I go out with no masks and everything's open.
Oh, okay.
And they haven't had a case here in quite a while, but it's 2 weeks in this room.
Yeah. Well, at least you're near the end. Yes.
Well, yeah. We're off to Hawaii, and they were doing the same thing there. Luckily, in October the 15th, they stopped doing that. Whoa. So.
Oh, they did stop.
They've stopped. They will stop.
Oh, we'll see what happens.
And it'll be a test.
We'll see what happens, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's ever-changing.
Stay safe.
Great talking to you. Great. Thank you. Great talking to you, too, very much. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk soon.
You too.
Be good.